All right. United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Lucy Castle presiding. All those with business before the court, please draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Davis. To my left is Judge Peach. We are here today in the matter of Clifford Cox. It is a docket number 14-2779. With counsel for the parties, please note your appearance for the record.
My name is Katie Clemens of National Veterans Legal Services Program. With me is Andy Odom, also of NVLSP, and we're representing appellate Clifford Cox.
Thank you.
On behalf of the Secretary, Julie Turner, and with me today, Ken Walsh.
Thank you. Both parties are ready to proceed. Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, Your Honor. We wish to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal.
You have 10 minutes. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Castle, and may it please the court, the issue before the court today is whether the legal presumptions afforded to Gulf War veterans who were exposed to environmental hazards in Iraq and other theaters in Southwest Asia must also be afforded to veterans who risked their lives in Afghanistan. This court should conclude that those veterans are entitled to those legal presumptions for three reasons. One, the plain language of the term Southwest Asia includes Afghanistan. Two, even if the court concludes that the statutory language is somehow ambiguous, it should not defer to the VA's interpretation that excludes Afghanistan, because that interpretation is arbitrary and capricious. Three.
So why don't you do one for me and tell me why it's so clear that Afghanistan is in Southwest Asia?
Yes, Your Honor. In the statute, and I am answering your question, in the statute, what the Congress asked VA, delegated to VA to define, is what were the Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War.
Well, let me take you there. Uh-huh. Why does it say that?
Why does it say that?
Well, why do you think it says that?
Southwest Asia.
Do you have the statute in front of you?
Yes.
All right, 1117, little a, 1, big A.
Mm-hmm.
During service on active duty in the armed forces in the Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War.
Right.
All right. And then you move on to B, Secretary shall prescribe by regulation the period of time following service in the Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move down to D, 1, 2, A. These regulations shall include the following: a description of the period and geographical area or areas of military service in connection with which compensation under this section may be paid. So why isn't that a general definition accepted by Congress of Southwest Asia, and VA gets to describe what within Southwest Asia is actually covered? They cannot go outside Southwest Asia.
That is true.
Okay.
But within Southwest Asia, as we argued in our briefs, the United States Department of Defense, the United Nations, experts on geographical names have included Afghanistan in Southwest Asia. Southwest Asia has a particular meaning. Theater of operations has a particular meaning. There can be no dispute that theater of operations includes Afghanistan as of September 2001. In D2A, which I'm glad that you brought us there because that's exactly where I was going, what Congress wanted to delegate to the VA was the ability to define what theaters of operation were going on in Southwest Asia during the period of the Persian Gulf War.
Okay, so let's go back to Southwest Asia, because certainly I would presume you would not include portions of Africa within Southwest Asia.
That's correct.
Or portions of North America.
Correct.
All right, so people are supporting the war, involved in the war, assisting in the war, but they are not part of Southwest Asia. So why is it so clear that VA is so wrong, arbitrary, and capricious in what they viewed as Southwest Asia?
Well, because VA is arbitrary and capricious because it's actually, VA has recognized that Afghanistan is part of Southwest Asia, and the way that they have is in 2009 when VA added the 9 infectious diseases that were specific to Afghanistan veterans, it did so under Section 1118, which only gives VA power to promulgate regulations about veterans who served in the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations during the Persian Gulf War. VA could have chosen another statutory authority, but it felt that...
Did they have another statutory authority?
Sure. They have 1110 for service connection. They have other more general statutory authorities that they could have chosen that I can...
Can 1110 provide the presumption? Can they just create it under 1110?
Yes, I believe that it's a broader... It's a
in
broader
the Federal Register, when they went ahead and promulgated all that, didn't they designate, didn't they discuss Southwest Asia or Afghanistan, Southwest Asia and Afghanistan?
That's not exactly how they put it. They discussed Southwest Asia. Let me just pull up 3.317 here. And they said Afghanistan as regards these particular 9 illnesses. But what doesn't make sense about that is that Afghanistan is either in Southwest Asia or not in Southwest Asia. It's not in Southwest Asia for 9 specific illnesses and then out of Southwest Asia for all other possible illnesses.
Well, it might be. I mean, that's two different things as to what creates the illnesses and where they come about. But I'm really more interested in Southwest Asia being something separate as discussed in the Federal Register by the VA when they promulgated the in the Federal Register, their statement, didn't they continue to refer to Southwest Asia or slash and Afghanistan? They referred to them separately.
The VA didn't really give us a lot of explicit guidance as to what it was thinking in particular. What it said was that the NAS had found that these particular 9 infectious diseases were affecting Afghanistan veterans as well as, and at times they used language such as, in fact, let me, I have the FedReg right here, where they used language such as Afghanistan and other, it said NAS also reviewed infectious diseases that might have affected U.S. troops who served in OEF and OIF in Southwest Asia, including service in Afghanistan. So they used language like that that seemed like perhaps they were.
Other places they used or Afghanistan, didn't they?
I'm sorry?
Other places they used or Afghanistan, didn't they?
If they did, I may have missed it. I felt that they were not incredibly clear about it. Oh, I see. They did use or in this one spot. Within a specified time after service in the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations or Afghanistan. But they still didn't provide any explanation at any point as to why they had decided.
Well, they had an NAS study that they were reviewing, which included Southwest Asia as they defined it, and also included Afghanistan as they did not understand it to be. And they do have authority, I'll accept your proposition, that under 1110 they could do a presumption for that. So why is that demonstrating undebatable, arbitrary, and capricious action on the part of VA?
Well, I think that, Your Honor, that in saying that in promulgating these regulations under 1118, if Afghanistan isn't in Southwest Asia, then 1118 does not give them the authority to issue these presumptions, to extend this presumption to Afghanistan veterans under that statute. And I think that VA knew that. And we know because when VA put out its first training letter, which I discussed in February 2010, it made clear in the language there that it considered Afghanistan another part of Southwest Asia.
Well, certainly an element of VA and a sub-organization of VA considered that. You can state that.
Well, I would consider all actions of the Secretary to be actions of the Secretary, regardless of whether they come in training letters, board decisions, regulations.
Well, at the time, didn't the regulations specifically define the area of Southwest Asia as it was understood?
It didn't, actually. It defined the area of the Southwest Asia theaters of operations during the Persian Gulf War. And we maintain that the reason Congress specifically delegated that, rather than delegating, tell us what Southwest Asia is because the Persian Gulf War is still ongoing. Congress has not ended it. The president has not ended it. And this is a volatile area and a fluid situation. And Congress knew that the theaters of operation might shift and change during this ongoing period. So in order to keep the possibility to change the theaters of operation more nimble, it delegated to VA, okay, who is in, where do we have theaters of operations in 1994? Congress knew that. Congress could have said Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, and been done with it. But instead it said to VA, this is ongoing, let us know as we're going along, such as after September 2001 in Afghanistan,
but
where
theaters
of operations are.
But they do state in the regulation the Southwest Asia theater of operations.
Yes. I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of what you said.
They do state in the regulation the
yes.
Southwest Asia theater of operations,
yes.
Not a theater of operations within the Southwest Asia.
Right. And what we would argue, Your Honor, is that those basically mean the same thing, that Southwest Asia, as the United States government, the United Nations have defined it, includes this certain area that includes Afghanistan, and that wherever theaters of operation are established.
So where did the United States government define it to include Afghanistan?
The United States government defined it in the DOD has a Deputy Inspector General for Southwest Asia, which includes Afghanistan. It also has the United Nations.
That's the one cited in your brief?
I'm sorry?
That's the one cited in your brief?
Yes, it is. And I also cite the United Nations group of experts on geographic names. And actually, in an article that VA cited, they talked about how Southwest Asia as a term started to be used during the Carter administration. At first, they were talking about Afghanistan and Pakistan. As time went on, the CIA Southwest Asia Analytics Center included Afghanistan. The U.S. Central Command Area of Responsibility for Southwest Asia included Afghanistan. So this has been consistent in the government. And
didn't some of those documents talk about Southwest Asia to then as an area, and then including Afghanistan as a tail end that's not part of Southwest Asia?
No. It basically would list countries that are included in Southwest Asia, and it included Afghanistan. Sometimes they've separated out the Middle East as a separate thing, or they've separated out Arabic-speaking nations as a separate thing. But in terms of Southwest Asia, that has always included Afghanistan.
Didn't the Secretary cite some things that indicate Southwest Asia has been defined without Afghanistan?
The sources that the Secretary cited, which I went through in detail in my reply brief at pages 2 and 3, I believe, they cited the Washington Post, which we don't consider necessarily to be as authoritative as the
United States. They wouldn't like to hear that, would they?
Oh.
But I agree.
It's a great paper, a paper of record. But it also, they cited a lot of CIA World Factbook, puts Afghanistan in South Asia. It doesn't have a Southwest Asia grouping. South Asia does not exclude Southwest Asia, but actually includes Southwest Asia. And there are other similar citations. They cited the Southwest Asia Service Medal, but that medal was authorized in 1991. It was only for countries that were involved in the original Persian Gulf War. So that wouldn't make sense to have Afghanistan either. So I went through these in my reply brief and why we think that those were a little bit of a stretch.
Well, you must think they must be an awful big stretch because you're trying to show it's arbitrary and capricious.
Yes. Yes, an awfully big stretch indeed.
Counsel, do you have any thoughts? I'd be interested in your thoughts regarding VA's rationale for excluding Afghanistan.
I would be interested to hear VA's thoughts on VA's
I thought you might. But,
yes. And this is another part of the reason why we feel that this is arbitrary and capricious. In Motor Vehicles Manufacturers Association, the case, it talked about how the reasoning behind an interpretation of a statute matters. Mm-hmm. And do we have a clear rationale between the facts found and the rule made? And here we really don't. I think that they gave reasons, VA gave reasons in the original training letter as to why it was adding Afghanistan. Environmental hazards are similar. It's in the region. And then when it, 8 months later, magically replaced the training letter with a different one that had the same date and did not say that it had been revised, it didn't provide any explanation. It said basically Afghanistan counts as to these nine diseases. However, no other parts of 3.317 will include veterans for service in Afghanistan. Why? We really have no idea. And so in a rule like this, and in the regulation, which Congress gave VA the flexibility to update it as things changed, and VA hasn't updated it as we feel that it should have as things changed, especially adding Afghanistan in September 2001. Why they've excluded it is anybody's guess.
Well, I'll ask them the same question. But since you mentioned the training letter, why, in your view, does the training letter create a substantive right?
We believe, and this comes from Fougere, this comes from a line of cases that discusses how you can't hide a substantive rule in a manual or in a training letter. A substantive rule is a substantive rule. If it confers a right on veterans, this extends a presumption to Afghanistan veterans, and so it definitely, a presumption is definitely a right. It's a new cause of action for those veterans who are trying to get service connection for undiagnosed illnesses. And it narrowly constricts adjudicator action. A RO adjudicator or a BVA judge would not be able to ignore 3.317 as they did here.
But is a training letter something that the veterans would rely on? I mean, they're not typically in the distribution stream for internal VA.
I'm sorry, that who would rely on?
Veterans. Appellants, right. They're not in the normal distribution stream for internal letter, are they?
Well, they do end up there. The way that these training letters go, they are distributed through a variety of means to the appellant's counsel, to veteran service organizations. They wind up out on the internet, and so veterans do get notice of these training letters when they come out, and sometimes they may not have even gotten notice of the later training letter that came out. So these do get to veterans, and training letters have been considered to be substantive rules, like manual provisions.
By whom?
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't have a case off the top of my head, but I can get you one.
Okay. No problem.
So, yes, the point that we're making is, regardless of the form, a substantive rule is a substantive rule if it grants rights and it narrowly constricts adjudicator action. And we feel that this undisputably does both.
All right, let's talk about both of those points. How did it grant rights and how did it restrict adjudicator's action? The first training letter. We'll get to the second one in a little bit.
Right. It granted rights because it granted a new cause of action to these Afghanistan veterans, a presumption. Allows you to get somewhere, allows you to skip nexus in 3.317 because it gives you the, if you have the, it allows you to skip diagnosis even in this case. If you have the symptoms and you serve there, you're service connected. And that is a substantial right, I think, for veterans to get. And also, it narrowly constricts adjudicator action because, again, an adjudicator would not be allowed to ignore 3.317 in the case of an Afghanistan veteran. They would not be able to say, as they did in this case, pain alone is not a diagnosis. We have no diagnosis here, so we can't grant service connection. So, Your Honors, if I may.
I'd like to pursue that a little
sure.
bit more. The training letter that we've been discussing here, if you read it as a whole, doesn't it look like this is a heads up to you folks out in the RO office that this we're going to be doing some amending of regulations? And let me read to you what
this is the original one?
It's the original one, and in fact, it's also in the second one, and mm-hmm. it's on page 5
mm-hmm.
Under the heading of Development in Claims Based on Service in Southwest Asia. And it goes on to say the procedures are generally the same, blah, blah, blah. However stated, okay, therefore, until the amended regulation becomes final, regional office personnel will be required to hold any claim where the medical evidence shows a disability pattern that is not one of three currently identified. And they talk about how you can go through the initial development of the claim, but read as a whole, isn't it just saying you can go ahead and develop it up until, don't make a decision on it yet, until the regulations are passed? And then sort of a heads up?
Well, I think that it was saying that specifically for this area, for chronic multi-symptom illnesses. If it had wanted to say that for all of the cases that it was discussing, it possibly would have said that.
Well, if you go down to, and I don't mean to interrupt, I apologize.
That's all right.
But if you go to page 3 and talk about qualifying veterans, it talks about, this is what is bringing this to the issue here at hand, is that Afghanistan would be included. But then again, it says a regulatory amendment will make this, that will make this official, is forthcoming, keeping in the idea of heads up. This is a training letter that's heads up to you folks in the field?
Well, what it says here, though, is that 3.317, sorry, hold on one moment, I'm looking at the wrong training letter. Here it is. What it says, however, in the section with qualifying veterans is that 3.317 will be applied to, just a moment. Oh, fall and do. I apologize.
While she's thinking, please add 5 minutes to the timer. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. It says that CNP service has determined that veterans with service in Afghanistan fall under all laws related to Gulf War and Southwest Asia service.
Well, read the next sentence.
I know. A regulatory amendment to make this official is forthcoming. I don't think that sentence legally changes what happened here. They say to make this official, it certainly would be cleaner in the regulation, but it's still a substantive right as soon as they say it here, a substantive rule as soon as they say it here, because they have granted that right. They have said you are covered by 3.317 as of this statement. This is what we believe they are saying here. And so a regulatory amendment to clean this up will help here in the development. In the part about chronic multi-symptom illnesses, there seems to be more to find out here, what other chronic multi-symptom illnesses there might be, what exactly the language will say. And so that's why I believe the Secretary wanted adjudicators to hold on a moment, and they would get right back to them with more information about this.
So what is the impact of this letter on adjudicators directly? You said it restricts what they can do. How so?
Right. Because CMP service have determined that veterans with service in Afghanistan fall under all laws related to Gulf War and Southwest Asia service, adjudicators were therefore constrained to apply 3.317 and 1117 to those veterans. Whereas before, they may have felt that because Afghanistan was not specifically enumerated in 3.317, that it did not and actually probably could not do that. Although I filed a letter of supplemental authority and the court has not yet ruled on it, but with leave, if I could mention the authorities that I mentioned there.
I have no problem. I was going to ask you about them anyway.
Thank you. We found 13 Board of Veterans Appeals decisions from 2009 to 2015 that said Afghanistan service is Southwest Asia service, therefore we're applying these regulations. VA has not been internally consistent on this issue. And while none of them cited either the original or the revised training letter directly, it seems... like a pretty good guess to me that some of them possibly had the original, some of them had the revised, or some of them felt like
some of them didn't have either because one decision was in 2009, not
that's true.
2010.
Right. That's okay. True. So another reason why we think that the VA's interpretation should not be accorded Chevron deference is because it hasn't been consistent. It hasn't been consistently held and longstanding, as we've seen in some Supreme Court cases that I didn't cite in my brief but could name it.
So because of this training letter, now your position is, and I understand it clearly, I think, that veterans who have symptoms from one of these 9 diseases then will receive a presumption?
Not the 9 diseases. The 9 infectious diseases that are specifically enumerated.
That was later.
That was later. Right. But it also specifically says Afghanistan veterans for those 9.
So what do the veterans get in the first training letter?
What the veterans get is undiagnosed illness or chronic multi-symptom illness. So in Mr. Cox's case, he has joint pain, he has back pain, he has knee pain, and nobody has been able to diagnose it. It's been clearly shown for years that he has these symptoms. Under a court ruling in our favor, the adjudicators would then have to apply 3.317 to Mr. Cox's case, and they wouldn't be able to say, we have to deny this because you have no diagnosis. They would then say, you have Gulf War Syndrome, we give you service connection under 3.317.
Okay. So those rights are created at your position. So now we get to the second training letter, which was passed in October, if I recall, or issued in October, and also backdated for some reason to February, which I'll ask the Secretary about that process. I find interesting. How does the second training letter affect the first?
Well, we feel that it doesn't at all, and that it shouldn't. That when you
because
when you repeal a substantive rule, you have to do so under notice and comment. There are many cases
that the training letter didn't go through a rulemaking process under the APA.
Right. The original training letter and the revised training letter. That's correct.
Right. Neither did.
Neither did. That's true. However, it's been well settled that a substantive rule in the veteran's favor does not have to have gone through notice and comment to be held to be a substantive rule. That was the case in Fougere. That was the case in Cohen, in Earl, and in Patton v. West, and a number of other cases. What the issue is that a claimant may not be adversely affected by a rule that should have been properly promulgated via notice and comment and wasn't. And so extending a presumption is something that we want the VA to do. We don't want the VA to have to wait and go through the proper notice and comment process necessarily when it decides that it wants to extend a right to another class of veterans. We want VA to be able to be nimble and to move quickly as veterans need them to in order to provide additional rights. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I see I'm out of time.
I'll unplug. Please add 5 more minutes.
The counsel, does it make a difference in your analysis? Let's say in the Fougere case where the M21 provisions actually had been associated with regulatory provisions previously. Mm-hmm. Does it make a difference in comparison to here where there's no association of a regulatory provision in the training letters?
Well, not necessarily. I think that in this case, a substantive rule is a substantive rule, regardless of whether it applies to a particular regulation that already exists or whether it's bringing an entirely new right. For veterans. I think that it makes it a somewhat easier case here that it does, while it doesn't explicitly say so, relate to 3.317. Mm-hmm. Says that we know what 3.317 is, we are specifically expanding it, and here's why. Mm-hmm. And so we want VA to be able to do that. And if we rule that it can't, then we'll be just putting further roadblocks in the way of VA helping veterans. Mm-hmm. But we don't want them to then be able to say, we take this back, we're not going to tell you why, and we're going to backdate it as if nothing ever happened.
Why would it be backdated?
Why was it backdated? Mm-hmm. I think this is just my personal opinion because we don't know, that it was trying to replace the original training letter and kind of act like it never happened, I feel like. That's the only explanation I can find. Usually when you revise a training letter, as I've seen, they say that it was revised. They actually have some redlining showing how it was revised, and they show the date of revision. And in this case, they didn't, and I'll be just as interested as you are to hear why this training letter was handled differently.
Thank you.
Do you know, and maybe you don't know, in the hierarchy of VA documents, where does the training letter fall?
Not working at VA, I'm not sure exactly, but my understanding has been, as appellant's counsel through the years, that we can cite to manual provisions, we can cite to training letters, we can cite to FAST letters, that they all have sort of equal usage among adjudicators and applicability because they are all considered to be directives from the secretary. That is my understanding of it. So I don't think that, for example, a training letter that was inconsistent with a manual provision that one would trump the other, or I don't know that that's the case. I think that they're supposed to work in harmony together. And recently, VA has even been doing away with fast letters, and I think maybe training letters, and putting everything into the M21-1 for ease of use. So I wanted to...
I had some confusion with regard to the discussion on page 5 of the training letter and the statement that, therefore, until the amended regulation becomes final. You somehow or another were trying to limit that down. Could you go through that again?
Yeah. In this case, the Secretary said that in this section regarding chronic multi-symptom illnesses, that adjudicators should hold on to these cases until the amended regulation is finalized.
Right. But isn't your client seeking to get covered under the regulation for a chronic illness?
No. My client is seeking to be covered under undiagnosed illness, which is a separate section of 3.317. If the Secretary wanted the adjudicators to hold on to Afghanistan veterans' cases, presumably it would have said so in that paragraph, since it clearly said so in this other paragraph. So I believe that doesn't necessarily apply to what we're doing here.
Counsel, specifically, what paragraph are you referring to here?
In the training letter?
Yes.
The paragraph that applies to Afghanistan veterans in the original training letter is at the bottom of page 3 under qualifying veterans.
Right.
And the paragraph brought to my attention by Judge Peach is on page 5 in the middle under development and claims based on service in Southwest Asia.
Right. Okay.
Discussing the amendment to discuss chronic multi-symptom illness. And
that starts with this training letter highlights?
No, it starts with development procedures are covered.
The top paragraph?
Yes, sorry. Middle of the page, top of that section.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
So the sentence before the therefore sentence, it talks about medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illnesses.
Yes.
And now what's the difference again between the undiagnosed and chronic that you're making?
Chronic multi-symptom illnesses are illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome, irritable bowel, fibromyalgia. These are conditions where a lot of different things are happening at once. And there's been some medical study into this particular constellation of symptoms that happen that they're not entirely sure why. Undiagnosed illness has a specific list of certain symptoms, individual symptoms, that in and of themselves could be an undiagnosed illness. An undiagnosed illness that's fatigue, that's manifested by fatigue, unexplained rashes, headaches, muscle pain, joint pain. And I'm reading from 3.317G. Neurological signs and symptoms, neuropsychological signs and symptoms, and I could go on, but there's a whole list there. And ours would fall under possibly 4 for muscle pain, more likely 5 for joint pain. You don't necessarily need a constellation of symptoms that includes as you would for a chronic multi-symptom illness, which is under, I'm sorry, I'm on 1117, I'm sorry, hold on one moment. Yes, I'm in 1117G. 1117.
What is that again? 3 point? What are you talking about?
Sorry.
The statute, 1117?
Yes, yes. I thought I was in the regulation, that I'm in the statute. The regulation has a similar list at 3.317B.
Well, let's do 1117 for a second.
That's small.
We're saying 1117?
Another 5 minutes,
please. That's small g, right, in the statute?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If you look back, if you don't mind, at 1117A2, it separates out an undiagnosed illness and a medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illness. And it explains that a medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illness, such as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, defined by a cluster of signs or symptoms. A2A, for an undiagnosed illness, the Congress explains further in G, in 1117G. For purposes of this section, signs or symptoms that may be a manifestation of an undiagnosed illness or a chronic multi-symptom illness. But each one by itself could be a manifestation of an undiagnosed illness.
I understand. Thank you.
Sorry about the confusion, Your Honor.
That's okay. So what does taking judicial notice of these other documents do if the court were to take judicial notice?
The supplemental authority letter that I... What we were trying to bring to the court's attention there is the secretary's inconsistency with applying 3.317 and with applying its interpretation
right,
of the
statute.
Right, I got
that. I'm talking about the definitional materials.
The definition. Oh, yes. In terms of what is Southwest Asia, those
yes.
materials?
Yes.
Yes. All we were trying to show was that Southwest Asia has a common meaning, that when you go to various authoritative sources, they all define Southwest Asia the same way. Mm-hmm. So we were hoping that that would help the court in its evaluation of our plain language, plain meaning argument in particular about whether when Congress said Southwest Asia, the VA knew what it meant. When Congress said theater of operations, the VA knew what it meant. What Congress delegated to VA was to name where we were having war in Southwest Asia during the Persian Gulf War. And VA did that very
Actually,
well.
Actually, they gave them the authority to define what was going to be covered, not just where they were having war. Southwest Asia, theater, and what VA wants to cover.
Well, I would argue that that Congress said that it had to cover any veteran who served in a Southwest Asia theater of operations during
where
the Persian Gulf
War.
In 1117.
I thought you might go there.
I'm sorry?
I thought you might go there.
It's my favorite. Okay. I can only find where I put it. Here it is. The secretary may pay compensation under this subchapter to a Persian Gulf veteran with a qualifying chronic disability that became manifest during service on active duty in the armed forces in the Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War. And then the secretary shall prescribe by regulation.
Keep reading that part.
Those
regulations.
Do a degree of 10% or more?
No, I'm sorry. D1. D1.
Oh,
D2.
Sorry, D?
2.
D2? Mm-hmm. Right. The secretary shall prescribe regulations to carry out this section. Those regulations shall include the following: a description of the period and geographical area or areas of military service in connection with which compensation under this section may be paid.
So why wouldn't they just say Southwest Asia Theater of Operations if they meant the same area?
Well, because it wanted to leave to VA the flexibility to change that area. And so what we're arguing is that Southwest Asia Theater of Operations is a place, but it also says period.
Asia is a place. Theater of operations occur within that place,
right?
And VA can designate the area of military service within that can be covered.
Well, what we're trying to say is that Southwest Asia is a place, theater of operations is a thing, that if it had just said, tell us what a Southwest Asia theater of operations is, that VA might have thought that it was just saying, what countries are we in? But by saying the period and the geographical area or areas of military service.
Well, wasn't that what theater of operations? I guess what I'm saying is if they had said theater of operations, it'd be clear that they're covering the same exact area, right? Southwest Asia theater of operations. But they didn't say that. Add another 5 minutes, please. They said the area of military service in connection with which compensation under this section which covers armed forces in the Southwest Asia theater of operation.
Right. And so that's why we believe that
the
question, what is the military service in connection with which compensation under this section may be paid is answered by veterans with service on active duty in the armed forces in the Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War. Perhaps it didn't want to repeat itself so much, but it wanted to be more explicit that it wanted VA to say both geographically and temporally, where are these theaters of operations in this Southwest Asia region as this war period goes on and on?
Council, does 117 2 little b support your argument where it says the secretary shall prescribe by regulation the period of time following service in Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War that the secretary determines is appropriate for the presumption? And then it goes down to the other section where we're just discussing the more specific description. The secretary shall prescribe regulations to carry out this section, shall include geographical area or areas of military. I mean, why in 2B
discuss this in a broader context, Southwest Asia Theater of Operations, and then in D1, we're into a little bit more details.
1117B actually discusses something different. It says the Secretary shall prescribe by regulation the period of time following service. Mm-hmm. This is about when after service did you start to have these symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so far it's been on and on into the future. They've not put a limit on that. Or at least they keep pushing the limit further out. So this is about, do you get the presumption if you get the symptoms after 1 year? Do you get the presumption if you get the symptoms after 10 years or forever into the future? So the period of time following service that is appropriate for the presumption of service connection.
But
so
in this the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, well, because that's still, you know, where the veteran has to have served right. in order to get the presumption at all.
Right.
But after service.
Right.
You know, so in this case, Mr. Cox actually started having this pain while he was in Afghanistan, but in other cases, you can have it years after and the presumption still applies. And that was what Congress was asking VA to also make clear.
Do you know, during Mr. Cox's period of service, how many theaters of operation were there?
How many theaters of operation were there? You mean as defined by VA or as?
Well,
sorry.
As we look in this regulation, it just talks about theaters of. All right. If you go down to F, we're still in 1117,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to go to subpart F, like in Fox.
Mm-hmm.
For the purpose of this section, the term Persian Gulf veteran means a veteran who served on active duty in the armed forces in the Southwest Asia theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War.
Yes. Mr. Cox served in Afghanistan in 2009. I do not have in front of me, but I can get for you, how many theaters of operations we had in Southwest Asia at that time. But I think it would be undisputed that Afghanistan was a theater of operations at that time. Obviously, it's disputed whether it was in Southwest Asia. But in Mr. Cox's case, he certainly was in a theater of operations. Does that answer your question at all?
Enduring freedom?
Yes, but the Persian Gulf War period is ongoing. And the Persian Gulf War period statutorily includes everything that is still going on in the region today. Mm-hmm. They could have separated out, you know, finished the Persian Gulf War period and started a new war in Afghanistan period, but they didn't, presumably because they feel, Congress feels, that the entire region is connected, and so the war is ongoing since 1990.
All right, we'll let you go for now.
Oh, I can't say my conclusion? I have 20 seconds.
Go ahead, use it.
Over 750,000 veterans have served in Afghanistan since December 2001. Many of them have suffered from the same undiagnosable symptoms as other Gulf War veterans. Congress created the perfect scheme for VA to update its regulations as the war went on for the benefit of veterans who served in this difficult area. Now this court has opportunity to ensure that VA sticks to the promise of its original training letter and make sure that Afghanistan veterans are covered. Thank you very much.
You will have 30 minutes, and if we need more time or you want more time, let us know.
Good morning, Judge Castle, and may it please the Court. Through 38 U.S.C. Section 1117, Congress has expressly authorized VA to regulate the process by which a veteran can receive Persian Gulf War benefits, and that's exactly what VA's regulatory provision, 38 CFR Section 3.317, does. Judge Davis, if I may, I'd like to get directly to your question regarding the training letter and our decision not to backdate that. The training letter that was referenced by appellant was not a substantive rule that produced any impacts on the benefits of a claimant and was not controlling because there was a regulation on point, which was Section 3.317, at the time that the training letter was issued. In my discussions with Compensation and Pension, CMP for short, I have it on authority that the training letter, the revision was actually issued to marry up with the regulatory amendment that happened in September of 2010, which, as I'm sure you're aware, is 1 month before the second training letter was issued. This was a live document, and as I think was discussed during appellant's argument, this was internal rote guidance. This was for adjudicators. This was not necessarily published for the benefit of veterans who were filing claims for compensation, but rather this was a heads up, as I think Judge Peach, you called it. This was a prediction of the regulatory forthcoming changes that would happen, and so there was no immediate change in the way that any claims were adjudicated, except for, Judge Peach, as you mentioned, there was a second portion of the training letter, and this was called the development and claims based on service in Southwest Asia that asked that the adjudicators perhaps hold. This was a generous, I think, manner of adjudicating these claims, and that they were attempting not to preemptively deny any benefits that were potentially going to come into place through regulatory amendment. But again, this was a live document, and it was amended to marry up with a regulatory provision. And so the original date remained on the document, which was published on VA's website. This was available online. It was dated the original date of the training letter. So
rather than process the claims involving these issues, the training letter's impact was simply to tell the adjudicators to hold for now. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I believe that is correct. This training letter was only in effect for a few short months, but in that time, there's no evidence that it had any impact on the manner in which these claims were actually adjudicated. This section actually requests that some of these claims be held, the ones that refer to the medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illnesses.
Can you just include in your discussion the differentiation that was made by your opposing counsel with regard to an undiagnosed disease and how that would not have been covered by the hold direction in the training letter?
Your Honor, that's a very specific argument to be made in a training letter that was not subject.
She made it, so I'd just like to know what you think about it.
Absolutely. This was not subject to any kind of notice and comment, and it did not produce any impact on those claims. The more general section of the training letter that suggested that 3.317 would be applied generally to all Afghanistan veterans also had the final sentence that said a regulatory amendment to make this official is forthcoming. So I believe that the distinction...
I understand all that part. I'm wondering, do you agree with her distinction is all I'm wondering.
Your Honor, we don't agree with...
Okay, then I'm going to ask you, why don't you agree? All right, because she makes a point that second section, and I understand the first section is there, and I understand it's a training letter, okay? But the second section is there, and I'm trying to figure out if you agree that when they talk about therefore, until the regulations change, hold any claim with the medical evidence shows a disability pattern is not one of the three currently identified, referring back up. Is that sentence limited to those disabilities referred in that paragraph?
Your Honor, yes, it does appear that that particular sentence applies only to the medically unexplained chronic multi-symptom illnesses.
All right, thank you.
I would note, however, that there's no indication in the training letter that action was to be taken immediately. And as you mentioned, there was the initial section that was discussed in appellant's brief that is a more general indication that a regulatory amendment is forthcoming.
Right, so the Secretary is relying on the first part of this regulation and not that middle part of the regulation.
Well, Your Honor, again, as Judge Peach knows, this should be read as a whole. And if one section is specifically prohibiting immediate action and there's another section that seems to agree but without such specific instruction, and there's nothing in the training letter to prompt any immediate action on the claims, then it doesn't necessarily follow that the second portion of the training letter has no applicability to how this court would interpret the training letter, and perhaps it would...
In your view, it was actually redundant, because the first part of the regulation said, first part of the training letter said, we're going to change the reg. Nobody should really do anything until we do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I got it.
Perhaps redundant and perhaps inartful in the way that it was published, but again, a training letter and not a regulation that was published in the Federal Register.
I'm sorry, I was trying to...
No, no problem. That's good. Counsel, let me pick up on Judge Peach's question she asked of appellant's counsel earlier regarding the training letter hierarchy. Where does that stand in
the scheme of letters from the VA?
Your Honor, a training letter is not any kind of effort at rulemaking by the VA.
Well, I notice it goes to all VA regional offices.
Yes.
And the subject matter of this one is adjudicating claims based on service in the Gulf War and Southwest Asia.
Yes.
Okay. But it's not a regulation attempt. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Could you explain?
Yes, Your Honor. This was not any attempt at rulemaking because there was, as I mentioned earlier, the regulation that already stood on point, and it did indicate that there was a forthcoming regulatory amendment. In this case, the training letter is less, we would submit less, has less effect than the manual provision. There's been a slew of case law that was discussed earlier regarding the effect and the force of law behind some manual provisions. However, in Haas v. Peek, the Federal Circuit did find that a manual provision that is directly in conflict with a regulatory provision will be trumped by the regulatory provision. And here we have a training letter that does not have the force of law, that is less than a manual provision, and a manual provision is less than a regulatory provision. And there was already a regulatory provision enacted in 1994, which had been standing for some time prior to the publication of Training Letter 10-01.
And which regulatory provision are you referring to specifically?
Your Honor, 3.317.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was tracking you.
Right. Certainly.
Okay.
Can I go back to the training letter, page 3, the original training letter?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to.
Yes. It's the original training letter, page 3. On the bottom, Roman numeral 2, adjudications, and then right under that it says qualifying veterans. And it says the regulatory division, definition of a Persian Gulf veteran provided in 3.317 includes service in a large area of Southwest Asia, but does not include Afghanistan. Considering the importance of current U.S. military operations in Afghanistan and its environmental similarity to all other regions of the Southwest area, CNP service has determined that the veteran with service in Afghanistan falls under all laws related to Gulf War and Southwest Asia service. A regulatory amendment to make this official is forthcoming. So was there ever a regulatory amendment proposed to make that official?
Your Honor, my understanding is that there were internal discussions to potentially make this regulatory amendment to marry up with this language. However, based on initially the congressional amendment that happened in 2001 to statute section 1117 that expanded the definition of the chronic multi-symptom illnesses but did not request or direct VA to take any action in expanding section 3.317, as well as the lack of scientific evidence to support an association or really any kind of similarities in the environmental exposures between veterans who served in Afghanistan and the veterans who served in Desert Storm and Desert Shield, and no kind of association via science or National Academy of Sciences study to suggest a potentially adverse health effects that were the result of these environmental exposures.
So why did they put this in here?
Your Honor, I believe that this was an attempt to compensate additionally to Afghanistan veterans. When it came down to it, the science didn't suggest that there was an association beyond the infectious diseases that were endemic to Afghanistan. And I would also note that in the expansion, the liberalizing expansion that took place in September of 2010 that added the infectious diseases and the presumptions, the science actually only supported that malaria and West Nile virus were endemic to Afghanistan, and so the expansion was actually only to was a generous one in that it included all 9 diseases for Afghanistan.
So anytime VA promulgates a regulation with respect under 1117 U.S. code or 1118 U.S. code, it's done so on the basis of National Academy Science studies?
Your Honor, I believe, yes, that when we add a any kind of illness to the list, that this is based on the science that we get from National Academy of Sciences.
And who commissions the National Academy of Science studies? Who calls those up?
That is the Veterans Benefit Administration arm of VA.
And does the veteran VA has ever, in their, when they call up for a study from the Academy, say, I want you to include Afghanistan?
Yes, Your Honor, for the infectious diseases study.
But for other diseases? I mean, there are other studies that they've done.
No, Your Honor, and that's essentially a policy decision that was made by VA. I would point to the...
The policy decision, what, that not include Afghanistan?
Yes, Your Honor, to not include Afghanistan, as well as the specific studies that are ordered by VBA, Veterans Benefit Administration.
Would you happen to know why that would be?
Yes, Your Honor, and I'll explain. It goes back to the legislative history that was, if you look to the initial enactment of Section 1117, there were concerns, and they note this, from veterans, veterans' families, veterans' service organizations, that essentially these guys were coming back from service in Desert Storm and Desert Shield. They have exposure, and they list it to the fumes and smoke, the oil well fires, the diesel exhaust, the immunizations, the potential chemical warfare agents, depleted uranium, all of this stuff. And they have this constellation of symptoms that they can't explain through medicine. And for that reason, Congress requested that VA put into place a presumption that would help these veterans get compensation for these adverse health effects that they might otherwise not be able to get service connected for because they couldn't be explained.
Well, can I bring to your attention on page 4 of the training letter?
The original training letter?
Either one, okay. Because it's the same.
Okay.
It's under types of claims involved.
Yes.
Disability claims based on Gulf War and Southwest Asia service are generally filed directly with the veteran, by the veteran. Many were filed in the years following the Gulf War. However, such filings continue to occur because of the chronic nature of the disability patterns. Additionally, current evidence indicates that the environmental hazards similar to those faced during the initial Gulf War, as well as new potential hazards, are faced by troops currently serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. So why haven't they called up studies?
Well, Your Honor, that, again, is a policy decision that has to be put by the concerns that are brought forth by veterans who are potentially experiencing those kind of symptoms. And the Secretary doesn't preclude that kind of action in the future, but presently there is not the science to back any kind of association that would be substantive enough to warrant a regulation to extend the presumption that associates negative health effects from these returning.
But is that because you haven't asked for the studies? Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought you were saying it's a policy call not to ask for the studies. And then you're saying, but there's no scientific evidence to support.
I understand. I think I understand your question, Your Honor. And that's because there has to be a catalyst to start a study. And
well, isn't the catalyst this training letter that says, faced by troops currently serving in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Your Honor, I'm not saying that there maybe isn't any evidence. What was happening in the first original conflicts in 1990 and 1991 was that there were a tremendous amount of veterans.
Well, let me ask it this way.
Okay.
What prompted the training letter, whoever promulgated this, VBA, I guess?
The VBA.
Excuse me?
Veterans Benefit Administration.
Right, VBA. What prompted them to put that sentence in there?
Your Honor,
I don't... Somebody just sat there one day and said, hey, we'll do it? No scientific evidence anywhere? I thought they were citing NAS anyway, no?
I'm not aware of any NAS study that was cited by this letter. Again, I think that this was, not to say that this was arbitrary and that they simply came up with what they thought sounded like a generous proposition, but again, there was, this training letter was published prior to the NAS study on the infectious diseases that came out in March, and that was what triggered the regulatory amendment. And I believe in my discussions with Compensation and Pension and the author of this letter, there was an intent to do everything that they could for the Afghanistan veterans, but in exploring the science and exploring the policy considerations as well as considering Congress's lack of action, even though they made a statutory amendment to Section 1117, after troops were deployed to Afghanistan, the overall policy consideration was that this was not a good time to do it.
Is that part of your explanation for the second training letter and the revision? Or no? Does that help to explain why the second letter was issued and backdated?
Perhaps, Your Honor. The second training letter, again, was meant to match up or marry up with a regulatory amendment that happened the month prior. The training letter, again, was a heads up to the adjudicators that there would be something coming down the pipeline. And when it didn't come, then the second training letter was updated, essentially just to show what had happened in the regulatory amendment, which was not what had been initially thought. Your Honors, I would like
to... So let me go to your brief, because now you got me confused. Page 14 of your brief.
Okay.
In September of 2010, the Secretary amended 3.317 to include non-infectious diseases that would be presumed service-connected with Persian Gulf veterans, or those who had active service on or after September 2001 in Afghanistan. In making the determination, Congress directed the Secretary to take into account reports submitted by the National Academy of Sciences. I thought I just heard a conversation where you said there were no studies, including Afghanistan, from the National Academy of Sciences.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, perhaps I misspoke. The National Academy of Sciences study that came out in March of 2010 did, on the infectious diseases, which was the regulatory amendment that you've referenced here, did include Afghanistan. They were trying to determine what endemic diseases infectious.
So you're talking about the unidentified diseases?
Yes, Your Honor. The point I was trying to make is that there isn't the science to connect a undiagnosed illness or chronic multi-symptom illness with service in Afghanistan.
Thank you for that.
So this training letter had nothing to do with infectious diseases. It had to do with implementing rules on the three to make it clear that fibromyalgia and the other two chronic diseases wasn't just limited to those three. That there were others as well.
Your Honor,
is that the purpose of this training letter?
Yes, I think. That at the time, I'm going to try to articulate this as best I can, at the time that the training letter was published, there was an intention to expand 3.317 to all Afghanistan veterans. When the NAS study came out a month later, it dealt with the infectious diseases, and so the training letter had to be revised after the regulatory amendment took place. And so the initial training letter doesn't specifically mention the infectious diseases. As I mentioned, the Veterans Benefit Administration is the one that orders the National Academy of Sciences studies, whereas the Compensation Pension Director was anticipating a change that was different than the one that actually ended up occurring. There are a lot of arms of VA. There's a lot of policy that goes into the determinations that are made. And again, the Secretary's determination was that presently, in 2010, when the amendment, when the regulation was amended, was not the appropriate time to take action on expanding the regulation.
All right. So, am I understanding the Secretary to say that Afghanistan is part of Southwest Asia, but the areas that are included for purposes of certain diseases does not include Afghanistan?
Your Honor, I'm going to try to rephrase. For purposes of 1117F, the Secretary contends that Afghanistan is not part of the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations.
Hold on a second. I just want to make sure I'm following this.
Okay.
If it's not part of 1117F and not part of 1117, I guess, then how could you include any of Afghanistan?
Your Honor, in terms of debating the wisdom of the Secretary's determination that the...
You're not going to question your boss, are you?
the determination of the Secretary to include Afghanistan under subsection C of 3.317 was an attempt to include Afghanistan insofar as the science generously allowed. This was a very specific provision that applied to a very specific area of South.
But that just allows it to, I mean, the only way the science can do it. I mean, I understand the concept that I got Southwest Asia and science says it's here and not here. I got that part. That's not, I'm trying to hear what you're arguing.
Okay.
If it either is part of Southwest Asia or it's not.
Okay.
And it seems to me you're saying it is, but we're not covering it for the scientific reasons, et cetera. And I'm trying to figure out, that's kind of not where your written briefs were going, but I'm trying to, you can talk to your co-counselor. He's got some notes for you.
He only wrote one word.
All right. All right. Well, let me be clear. Is it or is it not part of Southwest Asia?
Afghanistan is not part of Southwest Asia.
All right. So the Secretary made a mistake when he included a provision of Afghanistan.
But it was not a mistake in that I don't think either party would try to invalidate the presumption insofar as it extends to Afghanistan veterans for the specific purpose of infectious diseases.
You're saying he did it under some other authority?
Not some other authority, Your Honor.
It was then how did he do it? Seriously. I mean, you can't have your cake and eat it, too. I'm being honest with you.
Right.
It either is part of Southwest Asia, and he had the authority under that statute to do it, or he had authority under another statute to do it, and he made a mistake putting it under the 1117, or he didn't have the authority. It's one or the other.
Okay, Your Honor. Then I believe that we would call it a mistake. 3.317C, infectious diseases, including Afghanistan, potentially would have been better suited under a separate regulation to specifically address Operation Enduring.
Do you agree with your opposing counsel that the Secretary has other authorities that he could have included Afghanistan, a presumption under presumptive service connection, or is there no other authority? Because undiagnosed illness is only covered under 1117.
Potentially, Your Honor, I don't have a specific response on that question.
That's fair.
Well, let me ask another question, counsel, which I asked the appellant's counsel as well. What is the VA's rationale for excluding Afghan veterans from the provisions of 3.317?
Initially, Your Honor, that was because by executive order in 1991, only the countries to which veterans were deployed at that time were reflected in 3.317E.
Okay, and Afghanistan was not at that time?
It was not, Your Honor.
Okay, and that's the explanation?
That is the explanation,
okay,
Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Subsequent to that, Afghanistan has been included, but the Secretary has not included it. And your own view is that you cannot. You do not have the authority, at least under 1117, to include it, because it is not part of Southwest Asia. That's the Secretary's view.
Yes, Your Honor. It could be revisited in the future to...
What, the definition of Southwest Asia could be revisited?
Well, the statute does say Persian Gulf veteran under subsection F is a veteran who served in the Southwest Theater of Operations, but Congress could amend that statute.
It's in the Southwest Asia.
Southwest Asia Theater of Operations.
Right.
If I misspoke, I apologize.
No, yeah, you said Southwest. But that's okay. But I'm just trying to understand, are we thinking that Southwest Asia is fluid itself, or the theater of operation within Southwest Asia is fluid? I always thought the theater of operation was fluid within Southwest Asia.
Your Honor, I think that that's a good interpretation of it because I don't
So Southwest Asia, promulgated in
1994,
had a meaning. Theater of operation had a meaning. The theater of operation is changing.
Yep.
But Southwest Asia isn't changing. I mean, that can't change. It's defined at the time 1117 was promulgated.
Well, in terms of determining whether or not the statute on its face speaks to the area encompassed by Southwest Asia, again, we would submit that Afghanistan is not part of Southwest Asia. For purposes of 3.317 and whether or not our decision not to include Afghanistan under subsection E is arbitrary and capricious or manifestly contrary to law, again, Your Honors, we would submit that it was not because in 1994 there were no U.S. troops deployed to Afghanistan. And in terms of an amendment to a regulation, this is not a duty to assist case. And the veterans that were in service in Afghanistan post 9/11 still have a direct service connection route for any of the ailments that they experience. And
were any of the definitions or sightings by your opposing counsel from 1994, or were they current, more current? Do you know?
Sightings for
defining Southwest Asia.
I believe that they, Your Honor, I'm not sure when they were initially published. I believe that appellant's counsel stated when they were last visited.
Well, let me just ask you while you're sitting there. When were they promulgated, the ones that you cite?
The authorities that I cite, they're current.
They're current.
They were.
Did you go back and look at 19? Thank you. But did you go back? Good thing you didn't have Chief Judge Hagel here. did you go back and look at 1994?
It was difficult to do that. I did try to find out, you know, when these groups were put into place, when this Office of the Inspector General was put into place, but it wasn't.
All right, thank you very much.
So, counsel, you're suggesting that the definition of Southwest Asia theater of operations is subject to some fluidity because theaters of war change, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so is this really a catch-up? Issue for
a catch-up issue?
A catch-up issue, yes. Like for the Secretary to revise this definition of Southwest Asia since Afghanistan is a combat environment now. Is that what you're suggesting?
Your Honor, again, it's possible that in the future there could be a statutory amendment to change the language of 1117 mm-hmm. that would give VA authority to promulgate a regulation that includes Afghanistan veterans for undiagnosed illnesses or chronic multi-symptom illnesses if there is the requisite support. And it, of course, I'm assuming that Congress would act in response to having the concerns that were raised by returning service members as well as scientific associations.
But the U.S. Code 1118, which is the presumption statute, says that the Secretary shall prescribe regulations providing for a presumption of service connection that is warranted for illnesses covered by a determination under the section, and that determination...
I'm sorry, Your Honor, to interrupt, but what section are
okay, you... Okay, so we're in 1118.
Right.
Yeah, excuse me. B, subpart little b.
Yes.
And it says, whenever the Secretary makes a determination, in subparagraph big B, the Secretary shall prescribe regulations providing that a presumption of service connection is warranted for illness covered by that determination for the purpose of this section. And then you go on to the next part. A determination referred to in subparagraph A is a determination based on sound medical and scientific evidence that a positive association exists between the exposure of the chemical or other agent, toxic agent, and the occurrence of diagnosed or undiagnosed illness in human beings. That tells me that you can promulgate regulations based on scientific evidence, and the scientific evidence is... based on, it goes on to talk about in the same statute, National Academy of Sciences. And I'm still not understanding why Afghanistan couldn't, you're saying that Afghanistan, including Afghanistan for infectious diseases, might have been a mistake when they promulgated a regulation that included Afghanistan?
Your Honor, only insofar as the placement of that presumption, Judge Castle's point was, of course, that if 1117 restricts us to Southwest Asia Theater of Operations...
And just to point out, 1118 does too.
And 3.317 is a Persian Gulf War veteran presumption, then then we would be limited to only veterans who were, we could not make a subsection that applied to veterans who were not part of Southwest Theater of Operations, because that would exceed our authority. The court could invalidate this regulation, this presumption, I suppose, if it wished to find that the secretary had exceeded its authority. However, I don't believe that either party is requesting that the court do this.
How many theaters of operation were there in 19, when Mr. Cox served?
The country specifically?
How many theaters of operation? Not the countries, but theaters of operation.
There was a dozen.
I think we're referring to a theater of operation. It's a military command, for example. So your military command, Afghanistan, is it under the theater of operation of Iraq and Iran, or are they separate? And then that's kind of the reference for theater of operation, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Because that's what the Congress gave the secretary the authority to define that.
To define the Southwest Theater of Operations.
Operations. And so is it all of Southwest Asia, which is what Judge Castle was trying to get to? Is the Theater of Operations a subsection of Southwest Asia? So, and my question then is, can you have more than one theater of operations within the Southwest Asia?
Potentially, Your Honor, I'm not exactly sure as to answer that question, but it does grant authority under 1117D2A to give a description of the geographical area or areas of military service. Mm-hmm. So potentially there could be authority for more than one. However, in terms of how many theater of operations,
Well, just to clarify, because I think it's coming from my question, mm-hmm. it strikes me that we talked about Southwest Asia and somehow or another that is defined.
Yes.
We've had a theater of operations in World War II in Europe that was different than the theater of operations in Asia. And if the statute said you could cover those veterans from the European theater, you can expand it to the Asian theater. This Southwest Asia, if that war expands, and God willing it doesn't, but if it expanded into Africa, I submit it's not Southwest Asia. And so I thought your point was, because I kept asking you, that Afghanistan is not Southwest Asia. You can fight in Afghanistan, you can fight in India, you can take it all the way over to China, and God forbid we do any of that. But if it were to happen, they are not covered by this, because whatever the theater of operation is, it's got to be within Southwest Asia. And your view is Southwest Asia does not include Afghanistan.
For purposes of 3.317, in terms of the Secretary's interpretation, I think that as to the Secretary's first point, that this was an ambiguous term, the Southwest Theater of Operations is a fluid term, and it depends on the source and the context. So in this specific case, 3.317 is the Secretary's interpretation of the Southwest Theater of Operations in terms of who should be included under that statute.
And your second view, as I understood it, is that there is no medical support for including those who served in Afghanistan for the undiagnosed illness or medically unexplained chronic multisystem illness.
Your Honor, essentially, and I won't disclose the, and I see I'm out of time.
I'm sorry, I had 5 more minutes.
We won't disclose that potentially there is some evidence out there to suggest some sort of association.
You won't disclose that?
I won't. disclose. That was a misspeak on my part. But we won't dispute that potentially that there is some sort of an association supporting.
It hasn't risen to the point where the Secretary believes it's appropriate to go forward.
Yes, Your Honor.
I got it.
Well, Your Honors, for the foregoing reasons, the Secretary would request that this Court affirm the Board's decision. Thank you.
Ms. Clemens, you'll have 10 minutes. Unless we decide you get more.
I'm sorry?
You'll have 10 minutes unless we decide you get more.
I've got all day. Okay. Thank you, Your Honors. I wanted to respond to the Secretary's arguments. First, regarding the training letter, I wanted to say to Judge Davis, there is, and I misspoke slightly, there was a case with a FAST letter where a FAST letter was found to be a substantive rule in Military Order of the Purple Heart in a Federal Circuit case.
called Military Order of the Purple Heart. Sorry.
Is that cited in your briefs?
I'm sorry?
Is that cited in your briefs?
I'm not sure.
Well, then give us the cite.
I don't have the cite, but I can provide that to you.
Yeah, we'll find it. Military Order.
Okay. It was not cited in my brief. This was just in response to...
But the name of the case was Military Order?
Yes.
Of Purple Heart? I can get you
the full citation.
Of Purple Heart?
Military Order of Purple Heart, yes, in the Federal Circuit. This training letter was, as Your Honor said, it went to the regional offices. It told them how to adjudicate. If I were an adjudicator at a regional office reading this training letter, I would not think that this was telling me, here's what we're working on, we're going to do this later. I would think that this says, Afghanistan veterans are covered now because we have ensured that all Gulf War provisions...
You do have a hard time getting around the fact that they're going to... Propose changing the regulation, though, don't you? I mean,
well, but then why tell the adjudicators in advance? Why not wait for...
Give them a heads up.
Sorry?
To give them a heads up.
I believe that the language that they used said that as of this moment, these
All right,
Afghanistan
veterans
are covered.
Show me where it says as of this moment. I mean, I'm just trying to...
It says... CMP service has determined that veterans with service in Afghanistan fall under all laws related to Gulf War and Southwest Asia service. So while it does not specifically use the words as of this moment, I think that it says CMP service has determined this. And as an adjudicator, I would read that and say, okay, that's a directive. I see that a regulatory amendment will come along.
But
yeah,
it also says,
meantime,
okay, all right, I got you.
So what is that? What is that? So you're an adjudicator.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with the next case?
If you have this letter.
If
it's a veteran who served in Afghanistan, I would treat that veteran as having served in the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations during the Persian Gulf War, and I would apply 1117 and 3.317 accordingly.
Based on that language?
Based on that language, yes. We talked a lot about, or you talked with my opposing counsel a lot about the legislative history and what Southwest Asia meant in 1994. And we know that Congress has not closed the Persian Gulf War era. It is ongoing, and as Your Honors said, other theaters of operations in Southwest Asia have cropped up, have occurred during that time, especially in Afghanistan. And so if we try to limit Southwest Asia to what Congress meant in 1994, or if we try to limit Southwest Asia theater of operations to only what happened in the original Gulf War, then we're circumventing Congress.
I like your first sentence. If we tried to limit Southwest Asia, because that's the issue. It's Southwest Asia and it's theater of operation. And as I said, your argument would be I can expand Southwest Asia theater of operation to include China, to include Africa. And I'm not following that one, just to let you know. I don't know about these two, but I'm
right.
Not. So no. I'm unfocused on Southwest Asia. What did it mean in 1994 to people who passed it? And so far as I've seen, you haven't given that part.
Well, in our briefs, Southwest Asia has a particular meaning. It has a common meaning as the United States Department of Defense has defined it, as the CIA, as the United Nations. Southwest Asia means something. My opposing counsel said Southwest Asia means something for the purposes of, we believe that Southwest Asia means the same thing, regardless of what you're saying about it, and that what Congress was giving to VA was the flexibility to change the theaters of operation within Southwest Asia. And VA has not kept up with the times. It has not added other theaters of operations as they've occurred within Southwest Asia. You're right that if war is in Africa or in China, those would not count. If Congress wanted to protect those veterans, it could then put out a new statute. But Afghanistan...
So it strikes me that the question is, are they arbitrary and capricious in telling us that Afghanistan is not part of Southwest Asia and that they made a mistake including... any indication that the non-presumptive diseases were under 1117?
Right. And I think that, you know, we have the Secretary's admission that it was at least a mistake. I think it's clear that the Secretary, that this was not well thought out in terms of the Secretary considering how Afghanistan veterans fit into this whole scheme. It used 1118 as its statutory authority. It didn't just, you know, mention... This is related to the Gulf War illness. It said, this is our statutory authority for granting presumptions to Afghanistan veterans. And the reason we say that that is arbitrary and capricious is because
Again, you can't say that Afghanistan is in, that Afghanistan veterans are veterans who served in the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations during the Persian Gulf War, but only if they have these nine diseases. They either are or they aren't. And we believe, as my opposing counsel said, we don't want this court to invalidate those provisions and say that the secretary exceeded its authority. We want this court to find that the secretary was within its authority because Afghanistan is in Southwest Asia and because it is a theater of operations during the Persian Gulf War within Southwest Asia, and that VA, in fact, did not go far enough.
But even if you get beyond Southwest Asia and leave that in the zone of who can figure it out, you're still, your next proposition is that somehow this training letter was substantive, binding on VA, despite its regulation.
Yes.
Okay.
That it was a specific expansion of the regulation. I was confused by the Secretary's explanation regarding the training letter, because if something is a live document, it would generally say draft on it. When you published it, it would have the date of publishing. It wouldn't have the date of some earlier draft that was just internal and was never meant to be dispersed, and it actually was dispersed. So I didn't find
that. The Secretary's explanation was that they were matching the training letter to the regulation that had just come out.
Right, that they had decided, and in the regulation, neither in the regulation where they added the nine infectious diseases, nor in the second training letter, do they provide any explanation for why they are repealing this extension of the presumption that they gave to Afghanistan veterans. And so there's nothing that this court can point to say, you know, these were the reasons that they considered, here's the rational basis between what you considered, the facts found, and the rule created. And that's one of the reasons why we consider this to be arbitrary and capricious. It's internally inconsistent. You can't be in Southwest Asia for some diseases and not others. And also, and they haven't applied it consistently, as the board decisions that I mentioned earlier said.
Are you saying that the inclusion of Afghanistan in infectious diseases is arbitrary and capricious?
No.
Okay.
We believe that that was within VA's power because Afghanistan is in Southwest Asia, no. So 1118.
Yeah. So, sorry. Going back to your argument that it's very clear that Afghanistan is in Southwest Asia, and you quoted a DOD, Department of Defense Inspector General or
yes.
Department of the Army Inspector General
report,
why would that have any authority over another executive agency like the VA?
It doesn't have binding authority, but what okay. we were trying to establish was that there's a common meaning of Southwest Asia.
And then you talked about the United Nations Group of Experts on Geographical Names.
Yes.
And in right up front, it says this group is composed of experts from various linguistic and geographical divisions that have been established by the UN Conference on Standardization of Geographical Names. Countries decide for themselves the division to which they wish to belong. And so I go to Asia, Southwest Division, other than Arabic, Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Cyprus, Iran. Then you go to a section where it talks about the Arabic countries, which include the Arabic division.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in here that would say to me right off the bat that this is very clear that Afghanistan is in the Southwest Asia, just like Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and those other countries that. So I don't understand how that is telling me that it's so clear that Afghanistan is part of Southwest Asia.
Well, I think that it is relevant where the country placed itself. That is at least a relevant consideration. I think that when you look for a definition of Southwest Asia, you might look to the United Nations, you might look to the United States government. We're not trying to say that there is a dictionary definition from
on high. Go ahead, 2 minutes, please.
Rather than saying there's a dictionary definition from on high that says this is Southwest Asia, that there's a common meaning, that all of the authoritative sources that have considered what countries are in Southwest Asia have included Afghanistan. And so while none of this would be binding on Congress, it would be understood, and it would be understood by VA. And we believe that VA did understand Afghanistan to be part of Southwest Asia, and that's why they treated it as such until this sudden role reversal in the second training letter, where they said it's only in a Southwest Asia for these nine diseases, not for the other ones. It may have, I'm sorry. So, yes, we were trying to establish a common meaning, not necessarily that authorities that Congress must listen to have decreed.
Well, Counsel, you think the Gray case is controlling here? That's the Danang Harbor, brown water, blue water issue?
Right. We believe that in Gray, I'm sorry, I've got it right here. Gray basically applied Skidmore deference to the VA's interpretation and decided that it was not...
it was arbitrary and capricious.
Yes, that it was arbitrary and capricious. And the reason why was because there was no reason given as to why, you know, some bays were included and other bays were not, why some river mouths were included and other river mouths were not. That the reason for the statute, which was to protect veterans who had been sprayed by herbicides, needed to apply to where the lines were drawn, whether veterans had been in an area that was likely to have been sprayed by herbicides or not. In Gray, the arbitrary and inconsistent results were not considered to be a tolerable byproduct of line
drawing. Have another 2 minutes, please.
And we feel that that is controlling here because, similarly, we have an interpretation that's inconsistent with the, with the statute and doesn't reflect the agency's fair and considered judgment. We don't have any agency reasoning here, just as we didn't in Gray, as to why Afghanistan is only included for nine diseases and not included for others. And so I believe that, yes, that Gray is binding here in terms of showing what makes a VA consideration arbitrary, a VA interpretation arbitrary and capricious, and that in there are definitely some similarities.
Thank you.
Let me see. Sorry about this. Just wanted to make sure I haven't forgotten to say anything. Do you have any further questions?
No.
I think I have said everything that I intended to say. So I urge you once again to vacate and remand the board's decision and to hold that Afghanistan is in Southwest Asia by common meaning, and that VA has acted arbitrary and capriciously by not including it, or by including it only for some diseases and not others, and to help Afghanistan veterans who have been suffering from these same undiagnosed, unexplainable illnesses.
Did you give sites to studies that the Afghanistan veterans are suffering from the same illnesses or undiagnosed illnesses?
I have read the studies. I have to look to see if I cited to any of them. I believe, yes, I cited to Gulf War and Health, Volume 5, Volume 6, Volume 7, and there were all on page 15 of my initial brief.
Okay, thank you.
Where they did find similarities, in the environmental hazards and in some of the symptoms that have been found. Anyway, I'm out of time, but thank you very much.
You're out of time, but I'm going to point out that
Okay. Since
I am sitting in the senior chair under 7261, I presume your vacate means set aside.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will come down to your calendar. Case will be submitted.